Jurassic Park 3, Spinosaurus Potter, by Gojira 126, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of Michael Crichton and J.K. Rowling. Chapter 10. Upon the boat arriving at the beach of Isla Sorna, Harry could smell something was off. Given he had lived here for his entire life, he knew the smells of this island quite well. He smelled decay, rotting and rancid flesh in the air as his stomach lurched from it. Looking at the trees, he could see them in a paler reflection of their once powerful beauty. The smell wasn't of his island. He sneered before stepping onto the beach as he turned into the Spinosaurus, smelling the air with far more detail. People scurried away from him as he moved up the beach, feet digging into the sand, leaving impressions in them. He tasted the air before shaking his head, letting out a bellowing challenge to anyone that dared come to his home uninvited. Something answered back, but not in the standard, proper way of challenge. The ground barely shook before a shape slithered into the light, dark gray body following a skull of a long-snouted predator. Walking on two legs, its serpentine tail flicked behind it, resembling that of a crocodilian. Harry sneered at the thing as it looked narrowly at him with those empty sockets before it leapt at him with a gurgling shriek like a bat from the depths of Hades. He barely dodged in time as the webbed talon feet came down, almost removing his snout from his face. Harry roared back and lashed out with his jaws, hoping to get a wound. The beast sidestepped and slapped Harry across the face with its tail. He hissed, backing off, purposefully drawing the beast in. The creature took the bait, leaping at him with a howl. His claws came round, slamming into the skull of the freakish beast, digging in before tearing out three deep, jagged wounds. The creature was also thrown off balance as dark yellow-colored blood gushed out of the wounds, down Harry's enlarged claws, something Harry found interesting from his potion regimen. His single fishing claw had grown on the other digits. They also hardened and sharpened, allowing him to carve through flesh and bone with ease. Something this creature now realized as it did its best to back away towards the forest. But Harry charged in with his jaws opening. The stronger jaws snapped closed around the neck of the thing, blood oozing onto his tongue as he grabbed onto the beast's skull and open neck with his claws. The claws sank into flesh and burrowed into bone as the creature thrashed, trying its best to escape. Harry wouldn't let it. He recalled a young Tyrannosaurus Rex that he had fought ages ago, and killed. He curled, twisting the neck around until, with a satisfying crunching crack, the beast stilled. Its neck snapped like a twig, its life force leaving its body. Harry tossed it to the sand, slamming a foot onto its corpse as he roared into the sky his triumphant return to Isla Sorna. Lily got up from behind the cover that she and a few other security personnel had hidden behind that consisted of heavy boxes. Looking up, she grimaced at the massive corpse of the bipedal monster that her son stood triumphantly over. The head of the security force motioned for others around them to secure it before putting a hand to his headset. "Ma'am," he said, "choppers have spotted what looks like a nest only a short distance from our position." Her son turned, snouting the air before he stomped his way into the trees. Given that this wasn't something that Biosyn or InGen created, this new beast was an invasive species. Her son was going to kill the intruder's brood before they could grow into animals that ruined the ecosystem of this island, which was pretty solid in how it all fixed itself. Lily had been rather impressed by the island's predator-sided balance, the few herbivore species outsizing the carnivore population. It was the predators keeping the herbivores from overpopulating the island. The security head grunted as five people formed up behind him and Lily, carrying flamethrowers with fuel canisters attached to their backs. She gave the security head a shocked look, the man shaking his head. "Lots of scavengers on this island. Big scavengers. A carcass is an invitation. Fire not so much," he explained before the smell of rotting flesh reached her nose. "By Merlin's armpits," Lily cursed. stopping and nearly emptying her stomach as she grimaced. Her son was growling at the corpses, a wall around the nest, the Spinosaurus cringing as the sounds of little creatures were heard behind the corpse wall as the flamethrowers spaced themselves across equal distance intervals. In moments, orange light erupted from their weapons as the bodies cooked and burned. Soon the torrent of flames burnt into the bodies and past them, the screams of the brood inside dying by heat, asphyxiation, and flames before they stopped. The smell of cooked flesh was better than the rotting smell. "Burn the corpses away," she ordered, grimacing as she looked at her son before motioning him to follow her. "I don't want anything to come closer until we set up a proper base." James Potter grimaced as he sat on the whizzing gamut, listening to an elderly lord drone on and on about muggle regulation and other pureblood nonsense. Sirius, sitting next to him, gave him a look of utter boredom, which James agreed with wholeheartedly. They had been there for over an hour, and during the monotonous speech, reminiscent of Professor Binns's history of magic lectures, James was contemplating a court murder when Amelia Bones finally called the man to hurry up, her wand in hand and clearly ready to end the torture.
"At least Amelia is keeping the older ones in line," Sirius grunted.
His girlfriend Amelia fit him quite well.
"And we'd turn 300 by the end of the hour."
"I'd prefer to end now so I can join my family at the island," James intoned. "It'll be the first time back for all of us since Eri's 15th birthday."
Sirius shrugged, raising his wand along with James as they denied the old man's pureblood law proposal.
"Maybe you'll find Bellatrix out there on the island. She's been missing since the night before her arranged marriage."
James frowned.
"Whatever happened to that contract?"
Sirius sneered as he whispered.
"Contract burnt up. Along with dear old mum. Turns out, the other contracts with my cousins were also destroyed upon her death due to her not being a lord or doing it within father's authority. A fitting end for the hag, I say."
James nodded, remembering being invited to Narcissa's marriage to Severus Snape of all people. Severus had been quiet during the marriage until he met with both James and Lily, apologizing for his past behavior and hoping for a fresh start. Under Lily's gaze, James had apologized for his behavior as well, and the pair had called a truce. Snape seemed to be happier with a potion mistress like Narcissa, both of them now teaching at Hogwarts. Narcissa the younger years and Snape the older, more advanced students. James spotted Severus Snape in his seat of House Prince, looking over some notes that his wife had given him before returning his gaze to the front as the next item of business came up.
"Lords and ladies of the Wizengamot," Dumbledore intoned, "our next item of business concerns the creation and protection of ancient beasts from before the age of man and wizard kind."
James stopped before sighing at the old man.
"Albus, why are you so focused on those islands?"
Sirius gritted his teeth.
"He's still focused on Harry after all this time."
James shook his head minutely.
"Not exactly. More like he's been interested in understanding what my son went through on Isla Sona than he learned about the creatures there. We did exchange letters about doing something similar to this, but I got too busy and I guess it slipped my mind."
"Shall we stop him?" Sirius began, but Snape spoke up.
"Is this about the Muggles and their science, or is it about Herr Potter's ability to transform into one of these ancient beasts? If it's the latter, then I suggest this body drops it, as that is a private family matter."
His sneer echoed through the room as the witches and wizards muttered amongst themselves. James frowned as Albus's face briefly showed signs of fatigue before his mask of grandfatherly calm returned. Sirius gave him a sideways glance as the Wizengamot turned to their collective ire onto Dumbledore, the old wizard who was now meddling in major family business. The debate grew heated, with many members expressing their disdain for Dumbledore's perceived interference in House Potter's affairs. Albus Dumbledore, maintaining his composure, tried to explain the bill further.
"This proposal is meant to protect the creatures of the past, ensuring they are not exploited or harmed."
"I think I can cause it to stall, so you and Albus could speak more on this bill of his," Sirius muttered to James.
"And what plan of action is that?"
"Simple. push them into ignoring the bill until you propose it yourself.
James sighed before giving his brother in all but blood a nod.
Protect them? Or meddle in the lives of Ass Potter?
Sirius retorted, acting like he was not pleased with the bill himself.
This bill feels like an intrusion into a family's private affairs.
The room buzzed with agreement, and it became clear that the majority saw Dumbledore's proposal as an overreach. James felt no satisfaction as he watched his old headmaster's proposal be ignored in favor of something else. However, it did give him time to talk with Albus and hopefully do something better. Across the island from the Muertes Archipelago is the place known as Isla Cráneo, Skull Island. The land that God left alone, or so it is said. This land, untouched by the modern world, sits atop a powerful ley line of magic that erupted into a volcano in the distant past. The island, initially the size of a continent, appeared to shrink over time as its magic concealed its true expanse. In reality, Isla Cráneo is far larger than it appears, similar to an expansion charm on a trunk. This magical dome preserved the island's ancient inhabitants through millennia, even shielding them from the cataclysmic KT event that wiped out the dinosaurs elsewhere. Over millions of years, new species evolved and adapted to the island's unique ecosystem. But as of now, there is one creature that doesn't fit inside the island's highly death-filled ecosystem. Its vast intelligence has allowed it to compete with the top predators like Vastatosaurus Rex and Venatosaurus, terrifying the far more primal humans that live in the destroyed ruins that had once been a great civilization. The Iwi, a more advanced and harmonious human population, call this creature the White Death, a dinosaur that impossibly possesses human intelligence. Even so, they leave a portion of their larger kills to keep the creature from assaulting them while their primitive cousins are attacked every other month. The only thing keeping them alive is their swift population growth, much to the annoyance of the Iwi, a people that breed like rats. The creature in question was now watching its target, a young Brontosaurus baxteri, part of a herd of sauropods that were grazing in the lowlands. Licking its jaws before its skin rippled from ghostly white to a perfect imitation of its surroundings, slowly drawing closer to its target. However, one of the adults must have caught a whiff of its smell as it let out a trumpeting call. It paused, as the adult seemed to be unnaturally on edge for one of its kind. Patience was key in this hunt, as it crouched lower towards the ground. The adult seemed to be ignored as the largest male, the bull of the herd, used its tail to whack the jumpy adult. That made the other move away from where its prey was, allowing the predator to sneak closer and closer before being within lunging distance. The young Brontosaurus was feeding on one of the medium to large trees, standing around 34 feet at its current age. Silently, it waited until it turned its hindquarters toward it before it leapt. Its camouflage faded as it landed on the back of the youngster, taloned feet digging into the hips and thighs of the herbivore. It howled in alarm and pain, trying to thrash its attacker off its back. It roared in return as its clawed hands found purchase, by sinking the claws into the flesh of the lower neck and shoulder. This cacophony of noise caused the rest of the herd to startle as the predator finally decided to finish this. Powerful jaws snapped around the middle of the neck of the sauropod, crushing bones and slicing flesh. Blood gushed from the wounds as the animal thrashed, gasping and trumpeting. With a brutal yank, the theropod decapitated its prey, showering the trees, grass, and bark in its scarlet liquid. The rest of the herd, shocked and startled, bolted away into a stampede. Rolling its eyes at the fleeing herd, the pale theropod consumed the neck and head of its kill before dragging the body into the jungle. It reached a rocky hill where it had made its lair, a cave that offered shelter and a vantage point. Standing nearly 25 feet in height, this creature would have been Dr. Henry Wu's magnum opus, the Indominus Rex. Its crimson-amber eyes scanned its territory, which it had claimed after defeating several Vastatosaurus Rex, eyes never ceasing their slow sweep. muscles still poised and tense. The enormous creature began to shrink. White scales made way for creamy skin, and cranial spines flowed into thick, matted hair. Bellatrix Black sneered. She wore leathers tanned from the hide of a Megaprimatus Kong, a massive silverback ape native to the island. Bella had killed the beast herself, and it had shaken the earth when it fell. Her sneer faded as she spotted the great ape's larger cousin, its much, much larger cousin. Gigaprimatus Kong towered over the trees in the distance. To the Iwi, he was King Kong. Bella huffed, transforming back into her dinosaur form and returned to her meal. She paid no heed to the helicopters and planes flying overhead. They didn't matter. All that mattered was the kill. For the full text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Gogeta 126. Music from Jurassic Park for the Nintendo Game Boy, gratefully used by permission of composer John Dunn. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact info on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server where you can attend live recordings of all of my ongoing projects, and various ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.